Good afternoon, Thursday Farm News. I'm Kara Hart, along with Megan Turnquist. We'll also hear from Don Wick and Randy Koenen from the Commodity Classic here on the Red River Farm Network. Policy decisions were hammered out ahead of Commodity Classic by State Corn Grower Associations. Red River Farm Network's Randy Koenen has more.
State Corn Grower Caucuses discussed upcoming resolutions that will shape corn growers' policy for the National Corn Growers Association at their state caucus meetings. Minnesota Corn Growers Association Caucus Delegate Tom Hagg says there are an unusually large number of resolutions this year.
There's some that, you know, that's why you have these caucuses, to talk about it. Are they good for NCGA, or are they ones that are just kind of favoring somebody maybe in their own state or something like that? So, yeah, there was a lot of discussion. You know, normally we meet for an hour and a half, and we went for two full hours here today, and a lot of good discussion about things tomorrow for either when we the resolutions go up, when the delegates have a chance to talk to them, for or against them. So this is the grassroots. And this is what's important for policy for NCGA.
Hagg says there is also a little bit of horse trading that gets done between states with some of these resolutions.
What you do is, yeah, you go to the state and say, we've got maybe an issue with this resolution, and you go talk to them a little bit and say, can we work this out and do a little horse trading, like you want to say. And, yeah, that's a big thing. And it was done a lot, I think, in the past, and kind of went away from it, but now we're seeing it come back a little bit because of there's some resolutions, like I say, that are pros and cons, and or they're striking out words that maybe aren't beneficial that we want to see put back in there. So that's part of the, like you say, a good organization to do that.
The American Soybean Association honoring their past presidents at their trade booth on the trade show floor. Past president and Northwood, North Dakota farmer Rick Osley.
It's really special down here this year. Gentlemen I haven't seen for 5-10 years. I mean, we go all the way back to people that were president back in 88-89. And seeing these people that I haven't seen for a long time, and it's, you know, they've dedicated a good part of their life to this association, and they've made it a lot better organization.
Our reports from Commodity Classic, sponsored by the North Dakota Corn Council, North Dakota Soybean Council, and Ag Country Farm Credit Services. From Commodity Classic in San Antonio for the Red River Farm Network, I'm Randy Koenen.
At Commodity Classic, the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association is watching a resolution that addresses when federal agencies acquire land. Association President Jamie Beyer, who farms at Wheaton, says the agencies would maintain a guarantee of drainage.
Which in the Red River Valley is a really big one for us, so you might have Fish and Wildlife come into some property, and now all of a sudden the neighbors are getting flooded out because the drainage isn't being preserved. So that one's, I think, really important for us. I think when people hear that we have water issues, they automatically assume drought. And we, you know, spend a lot of time saying, no, we have too much water. We're getting more and more water every year. We had the wettest fall on record this past fall. So it's a matter of, you know, letting everyone know, hey, no, we've got something completely different here.
As of late, the regulatory environment seems to be challenging. Beyer says there are always developments, but no major improvements.
So recently there were some water quality objectives put in place for the Red River, and so we're trying to get the ag groups and anyone we can to comment on those. The comment period ends on February 28th, so we want to make sure folks have time to point out any flaws. It's with an international joint commission board because the Red River has, mm-hmm. you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and then Canada. So it's a consortium. It's been going on for a few years, but now they've just released sort of their nutrient targets. So if you Google International Joint Commission Red River comment period, you'll find it. And it's got the email addresses that you need to send it to.
According to the USDA Weekly Export Sales Report, U.S. sorghum export sales hit a marketing year high of 444,500 metric tons to unknown destinations. Wheat and soybean export sales missed projections of traders. Wheat export sales for the week ending February 20th totaled 381,800 metric tons. Soybean export sales totaled 339,300 metric tons. Corn export sales fell on the lower end of trade expectations at 864,600 metric tons.
These export numbers could be signs of China trade deal buying. USDA announced a okay sale of U.S. sorghum this morning, as we just heard. Allendale Chief Marketing Strategist Rich Nelson says also a purchase of 7,200 metric tons of U.S. pork to China is the best sale since November 2019.
Keep in mind, we're being compared with recent weeks of a 1,000, 2,000, maybe up to 5,000 tons. Biggest disappointment obviously comes in the soybean side of things here. This week's old crop sales, 339,000 tons. This is a problem. In fact, the lowest sale in 8 weeks and the second lowest sale of this marketing year so far.
Analysts are expecting soybean sales to pick up in March at the earliest. It's unknown how aggressive China will be at purchasing soybeans in those first few weeks.
We won't get the exports for March, April, May. At best, we're hoping maybe to get the tail end of the old crop year, maybe in that June through August period for soybean.
Weekly export sales caught attention of grain traders this morning, but the coronavirus continues to steal the show today. Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting President Mike Zuzulo says the markets are oversold on that coronavirus news.
I think the month of February, as we close it out, could be categorized as almost completely dealing with negative demand mindset. And I think as we go into March, we're going to have to balance that out with the supply side and with what's going on up in your area. We still have roughly 15% of the corn crop still left in the fields from last year, and it doesn't look too promising for an early start for the 2020 planting season in the Delta and in the southern states. And so I think as we get into March and we just simply flip the calendar, I think the trade's going to have to balance the supply and the demand fundamentals better than what they did in February.
Don't forget, you can find out more about the Red River Farm Network radio stations, listen to this broadcast, other podcasts, and more on your phone. Just bookmark rrfn.com. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news here on the Red River Farm Network. Corn, soybean, and wheat farmers from across the country are in San Antonio for Commodity Classic. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Don Wick is there with this report.
Here at Commodity Classic, farmers from across the country are continually asking about the standing corn seen across the northern plains. Arthur, North Dakota farmer Kevin Skunas, who's the past president of the National Corn Growers Association, sees this as a very tenuous situation.
Probably at the end of 2019, we probably had about 40% of our corn left in the field. It was around 1.5 million acres. You know, maybe USDA is counting that as on-farm storage. I don't know. That would be a little risky. In our area, there's quite a few cornfields around. Our farm has a couple hundred acres left that we're going to have to wait for the snow to go down a little bit before we can get that. But it's not a great situation. We had saturated fields going into the late fall. A lot of snow on top of that. We're going to have a real wet spring, probably a late spring.
The quality of this crop is also part of the discussion.
Now, there's some spots around the state that the corn is, you know, lower 40s at best, a test weight. Ours in our area, our unit train loader, Arthur Companies, he said his was, for the most part, 50 to 53 pounds on trains that were going out, so that's not as much of a discount. But if you're talking about 45, 46 pounds of dry corn, people might not buy that, and there's going to be some real issues with income on that.
North Dakota Soybean Growers Association President Joe Erickson finished up most of his corn this past weekend.
Feels good. We still have a little bit left just with the drifts and everything, but the test weight never came up really, and the moisture went down, but the test weight never really came up. So we just, instead of waiting, we just said, let's get it done so we can start thinking about spring's work. You know, we didn't have a lot of problem with the mud. It was the more of the drifts getting all the trucks in the field and in and out of the fields is probably more of anything.
Our coverage of Commodity Classic is sponsored by the North Dakota Corn Council, the North Dakota Soybean Council, and Ag Country Farm Credit Services. Reporting from Commodity Classic in San Antonio, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
Thanks, Don. Farm Service Agency Administrator Richard Fordyce joined state potato managers earlier this week to talk about quality issues in the WIP Plus program. Northern Plains Potato Growers Association President Donovan Johnson.
Essentially echoed what we've heard all along, that with the inclusion of quality issues into the WIP Plus program, they're trying to define what that means, how to relate it to a loss, how to calculate it. He did say that there probably is going to be significantly more losses than there will be dollars available to cover the losses. We asked specifically if there's a time frame in which dollars might be paid out, and he said he didn't know. It was definitely in the area of weeks. That's not going to happen really quick, but it's still a ways off.
Johnson and local potato growers are in Washington, D.C. this week for a potato industry fly-in.
The Minnesota Management and Budget released its 2020 February budget and economic forecast this morning. In that forecast, there is a small increase in the general fund revenue, along with a similar-sized reduction in spending estimates. That results in a project surplus for fiscal year 2020-2021 biennium. That's $181 million more than the November estimate. An economic slowdown is in the forecast.
Minnesota Farmers Union President Gary Wordish says there's lots of discussion on what could be done with that surplus.
You know, there's talks of the governor's got a proposal investing back in the, you know, the Senate wants, they want to give back tax rebates, and the House has proposals of investing in a lot of in child care, but I think you got to be really careful. You know, just because of surplus, that, you know, that can disappear pretty fast. We've been down this road before when we gave a lot of that money away, and then a few years later we had this huge budget deficit. So nobody likes to pay taxes, but you got to, you know, just because there's money there, you have to be very careful in what you do with that.
Earlier this week, Governor Walz set aside $250,000 for farm safety. For more information from the Red River Farm Network, be sure to visit Facebook and Twitter. You can also find stories, podcasts, and more at rrfn.com. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. This is National FFA Week. To celebrate, the Red River Farm Network is sharing stories of former FFA members from Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Northland Community and Technical College Farm Business Management instructor Josh Chosis remembers serving as the Minnesota FFA State Treasurer in 1995-1996.
It was probably, I think we had figured probably about 40 years between when I was a state officer and the one prior to in our chapter history. And so, you know, it was quite an accomplishment at that time and led to subsequent officers coming from our chapter, which was really exciting to see. And at that time, I got to serve with Mark Jarek, who's still a close personal friend of mine. And he was from Annulment. And so kind of we had two officers from northern Minnesota, which was kind of a unique situation compared to traditionally where the officers were coming from.
Joseph continues.
The year as an officer is an incredible opportunity for me to meet thousands of FFA members and impact their lives, and as well they impact yours, and just, you know, the friendships that you make and continue to have throughout your professional career that you made through your FFA experiences and through your college experiences.
Red River Farm Network's National FFA Week coverage is made possible by the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, Proceed, Bayer, and Nutrien. Follow our coverage throughout the week on Twitter and on Facebook. Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
Thanks, Don. The National Sunflower Association Board of Directors approved funding for 14 research projects in 2020. With a total of $345,107, the projects include studies involving insects, disease, weeds, production, and more. Taking a look at the markets before we leave you this afternoon, March Minneapolis wheat down 6.5 at 508.75. March Chicago wheat down 10.25 at 530. March Kansas City wheat down 7.25. March corn down 7.25 at 363.25. December corn down 3.5 at 378. March beans up 4.25 at 885.25. November beans down 0.25 at 912.75. In livestock markets, February live cattle down 90 cents at 113.17. April down $1.47. March feeder cattle down $1.87 at 132.20. April lean hogs down $1.90 at 63.25. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. This is the Red River Farm Network.